The following is presented by Le Sommet Coors Light, celebrity guests, entertainment, and oh, a bit of sports. Every Wednesday night on RDS.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
I'm excellent, Mitch. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I love that stuff. What did you guys do as analysts when you couldn't hear coaches when you stood between the benches?
You wouldn't be able to say that stuff because you wouldn't know.
Unless you could really read lips really well.
Well, it's pretty far to read lips. It's hard to read the numbers from up top, let alone reading lips. Mike was really on it, and he sensed it. In the third period, you could tell he sensed it. They were really good the first 40 minutes. They were outstanding. And Georgiev, the goalie for the Rangers, was fantastic.
He looks
really
good, doesn't he?
Oh, he looked really good. He looked calm, cool, collected. He kept it a game for 40 minutes, and then Pittsburgh had a power play to start the third. They didn't do much with it, Mitch, and the Rangers surged right after that. Probably the best game I've seen Chris Kreider play since his rookie year.
4.9.
He got called up from Boston College. That's probably the best game I've seen him play. And Zibanejad was really solid, especially when the Rangers weren't doing much. He was solid, but in the third period, he really hooked up with Kreider. They were outstanding.
So as I mentioned a couple of times, the Canadiens are not only facing a Penguins team that is mad about what went down, but they're facing a team that you have their three best offensive players, Crosby, Malkin, and Kessel, who didn't register a point last night.
No, but Gino was jumping last night. Evgeny Malkin was hot on it. He was really good. I don't know if you saw the video reel I built on him throughout most of the game, but he was really, really good. Again, goaltending mattered for the Rangers. Phil was just okay. He had one shot that went off the inside part of the post. If he scores there, it's 3-0 and the game's over. Sid in the first 40 minutes was awesome. The last 20, not so much like the rest of the team. But I thought Crosby was very dominant in the first 20. The middle 20 was good, not dominant, but good. And then in the third, I thought the entire team outside of Malkin really kind of disappeared.
All right. How much progress is Matt Murray making?
He was with the team. He's traveling. I think he, last night I saw him. I don't know if he made the trip to Montreal. I got to think he did. So that wasn't a goaltending loss for the Penguins, by the way. Casey DeSmith was outstanding in goal. He really was. He was very, very good. He kept that close in the third. I think he allowed the Penguins to get to overtime, quite frankly, and get a point. So goaltending was an issue. Tristan Jarry's obviously a very competent goalie as well. But I don't know where Matt Murray is. I don't even, like I've told you a million times at this time of the year, I don't even ask about players' injuries. I don't even waste my time.
Well, I understand that, especially with what came out of Montreal today in regards to Andrew Shaw. That I guess the news is good on the one hand, but on the other hand, they refuse to say what happened to him.
Yeah, so the news on Andrew Shaw is he's at home, he's resting comfortably, and he feels much better today, obviously, than he did after the game the other night. The concerning thing is they say he has not been diagnosed with a concussion, but they're treating the situation like he has one.
Yeah, I don't. That's up to their medical people. That's why I don't even try to go down that road.
Well, if a guy gets knocked out, how about we do this then, Pierre? If everybody sees a guy get knocked out, right? He's out. He's out. He needs help leaving the ice. How about we say he suffered a brain injury?
Sure.
Okay, so Andrew Shaw suffered a brain injury. He doesn't have a concussion, but he suffered a brain injury, we'll assume. Because if he's got a bad knee. He also has a bad knee, but I don't think you lose consciousness because of a bad knee.
The knee wasn't a problem there. But here's a question I have for you. Have you ever been knocked out?
No, I've been stunned, but not knocked out. No.
Okay. It's a very weird sensation.
You guys? I know you weren't knocked out in the ring by Jason Rockman, Gallo, but have you ever, on any other occasion, been lost consciousness? Oh, you have?
Not lost consciousness, but I've had three concussions.
Oh.
And it's a weird deal, right, Mitch? Gallo, it's a weird deal. Well, being knocked out is really surreal.
Well, that's why, like I say, I haven't been knocked out, but the situation, it's kind of hard to explain. When you get popped, you're not, like, unconscious, but you're not there. I can't even really explain it to
you. Well, that's why I say it's a surreal thing. You're in a different time zone, and you don't really know about it. It's hard to explain, but I would just say this. I like what Mitch Melnick said. If you don't want to call it a concussion, and a player's clearly been knocked out, then I do think you have the right to call it a brain injury, because that's why you're knocked out. Your brain's not functioning.
So are you aware, we hear a lot about the so-called protocol, concussion protocol. Is that a specific mandated approach, whereas it kicks in once that is publicly confirmed, Pierre? Is it a bit more nebulous than that?
I don't know that. That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that because I've seen some shifting sand. We've seen some games where clearly players have been stunned and dazed, and they've remained on the bench. They haven't gone to the dark room. Whereas I did a game last week, you're going to see a player play tonight, Brian Rust in Montreal. He clearly got dinged in. I mean, he got smushed against the glass in Philadelphia, and he didn't play from one Wednesday until the next Wednesday. And clearly he had an issue. He clearly had an issue. And the Penguins, to their credit, they travel a team doctor. Even during the regular season, the Pittsburgh Penguins do. I want to say on your bottom line, on your budget, it's probably a $300,000 or $350,000 addition to your regular season budget to travel your own doctor. And if you do it in the playoffs, probably, and you go all the way to the end, probably add another $250,000 to it. So it's probably, all said, you're safe on your bottom line and your budget. It's probably $350,000 to $500,000 to travel your own doctor. Pittsburgh does it because of the concussion stuff, I can tell you that. But I don't know how many teams in the league do that. I just know Pittsburgh definitely does it.
Let's go back 24 hours ago.
For pride, for Montreal, to set the tempo for next year. But to try to make Team Canada go play some meaningful games in the month of May. And for Galchenyuk would be to be invited to play for Team USA. I would love to see that for both those players because they need that. They need that a ton.
Pierre McGuire yesterday on Jonathan Drouin and Alex Galchenyuk. So today, after the skate, Jonathan Drouin was asked.
Yeah, no, I haven't been. So if I definitely get the call, I would love to go.
When do they start contacting players? When it's all official?
When your team's probably mathematically eliminated. Yeah. They have protocols and they pay attention to those and they respect the league and they should. But I'll give you this example. I was talking to a Swedish-born player last night who plays for the New York Rangers. They know they're not making the playoffs. And the Swedish coaching staff is actually making the rounds right now, scouting, and they were in New York last week. And I asked one of the Swedish players, will you go if asked? And he says, I'm not sure yet. I'm not sure. So he hasn't been asked, even though they know that the Swedish coaches are making the tour. So pretty soon, once your team is really mathematically eliminated, that's when I would say that's when the discussion probably heats up a little bit more.
Another major challenge for Drouin in the middle of the ice tonight.
Yeah, you got Brassard, Malkin, Crosby. You're going to be your handful with Kessel in the wing at some line. So I guess it's going to be a challenge for every centerman and every line tonight.
We're relying on him a lot more because he's shown us signs that he can handle that. So it's a growth of a young player who's still 22 years old, and it's a and it's rewarding, I guess, our patience at keeping him there and working with him. You know, we weren't seeing certain things we're starting to see now. So, you know, again, I said at the beginning of the year, you don't necessarily shut anybody down anywhere because you never know. You may need him there again. And the smart coach just keeps his options open.
All right. So, again, it's sounding more and more like the Habs are committed to Jonathan Drouin down the middle for next year based on these comments.
I think they are now, but I like what he – there's one part of that soundbite that's not getting enough respect. And I agree with you, by the way, Mitch, but here's the one part that I kind of like. Smart coaches always leave their options open. And one of the things that I think is pretty apparent, they want to upgrade at center. And if they upgrade at center, he probably moves. He probably moves to the wing. But until they get that upgrade – they can't commit to him moving to the wing. I understand reading through the leaves here what they're kind of trying to do. I respect Claude a ton. You know who's not getting enough credit? If in fact you believe that Jonathan's making progress, and you got to admit his effort level's been a little bit better. Kirk Muller probably deserves a little pat on the back there because you know the growth has been okay. It hasn't been great, but I think it's been better probably the last 10 to 12 days. So maybe it's taken that much time for Kirk to kind of get his message across, but I got to believe he's doing a lot of work with him.
Well, as anybody who knows anything about Kirk Muller knows, he's all about positive reinforcement. And yep. this year was to really putting that to the test, that kind of philosophy and attitude.
No, that's the hardest part about coaching a bad team. And I can tell you, I've done it, and that's the hardest part. It's easy to coach a team like Pittsburgh where you're winning all the time and the guys know how good they are, and every game they go into, they think they have a chance to win. That's easy. And Scotty used to say this to me all the time. The easy part about coaching in the league is when your team is winning. The hard part is getting them out of a losing streak and then keeping them out of the losing streak. That's the hard part about coaching in the league. So when you have a really good team, it's easy to be positive. When you have a bad team, it's really tough. It's a grind every day. So just think about the Rangers last night in Pittsburgh. That game ended around, I would say, probably 10:45. And Pittsburgh, I don't know what time they got in. What time they get in? Probably 3:00 in the morning in Montreal by the time they got to their hotels. Mm-hmm. And they're disappointed. So they're reloading tonight. They have to play tonight. That's just the constant grind. And what are we in the game? 67, 68, 69?
71 for the Habs tonight.
So there you go. I mean, so that's where we are.
But on the other hand, the flip side to that is now you could finally see the end, right? It's an unsuccessful season, but now you can breathe again because it's over, and now it's just like less pressure now.
That's a great point, and that's very true. And again, I've walked in those shoes, so I would agree with that wholeheartedly. The interesting thing, Mitch, though, is, and that's why I brought it up with Galchenyuk and Drouin in particular, playing in the World Championship, because I think it's going to be a very competitive. See, this, I would say this, and this is to quantify it for the fans. World Championship years and Olympic years, useless when we have NHL players going to the Olympics. World Championship years in non-Olympic years, especially this one, because we didn't have NHL players going to the Olympics, they matter. They matter a ton. So I think this is an opportunity for hopefully more than those two. And Brendan Gallagher, not that he needs it, but he would be another one. I'd love to see him go there because I think it helps players get better when they're playing those big-time games. I really believe that.
Carey Price practiced with teammates for the first time since the concussion.
Right.
If he's ready to play some games before the end of the season.
No. I don't want that. I'm not going to change my philosophy on that. I remember telling you that before they had the World Cup of Hockey.
Right. I know. You're with Gallo on this. I'm thinking because the season was so bad, he wants to end it on a better note.
I understand that. And I respect that part of him, and I respect what you're saying about it. But here's my problem with that. If you are sensitive to head trauma, which clearly he is, why would you want to risk that in a meaningless game? I want him 100% totally recovered, rest and rehabilitated, so that when next year comes, my MT, my meal ticket, is ready to rock. I want to get through this season. I want my guys to develop, but I don't need to develop Carey Price. I know how good he is. Don't you know how good he is? I think you do.
I got you.
I think we're on the same page.
I think if he wants to play, then he plays because now that he's had a concussion, you're always going to be thinking about a concussion, and I
know you are.
You know, so I don't know. I just
you know what? No, you do know. I think your point is relevant, but let me just throw this at you. I talked Sidney Crosby, and it's interesting that he's going to be in Montreal tonight. I don't think he ever was 100% convinced he was over his concussions till he had more than enough rest to say, I did everything I was asked to do. The doctors worked with me. I rehab properly. And I don't think he's had a concussion for a while now. And believe me, his career was teetering because of that. So I think I would use, and again, people say, oh, because you work for the Penguins. No, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with personal relationships and understanding people and the doctors. I would prefer to have a guy totally rehabilitated, completely and utterly rehabilitated, before I throw him back in there.
At the end of the day, I am a Penguin.
That's right, Rod.
99% of the time, I hit the audio, Pierre. That was not one of the times.
Okay. See? I'm clairvoyant now. That's good.
You wanted to jump in before on something.
Just on that topic, the only thing I'll say is that if I'm among the people in charge of the Canadiens, my job is to look out for the organization first and foremost. And I just, I don't see one good reason for Carey Price coming back. Now, I don't see one. If I'm in charge and my job is the team, I don't see a single reason for him to come back this year.
To come back this year for the Canadians, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're on the same page. I agree with that. I want my meal ticket, and the MTs, the goalie, the elite goalies in the league are MTs. They're meal tickets for every coach, and they're meal tickets for... Ask Mike Babcock. You think he's happy that Freddie Anderson's not playing or that he's hurt? That's his MT. That's his meal ticket. Because once you lose that, ask the New Jersey Devils. Once Marty Brodeur lost his fastball, they didn't have an MT. They didn't have a meal ticket. So, and that's... Ask the Rangers. Henrik Lundqvist. He's not the same player. They don't have that. So those guys are critically important. Let's put it this way: How would Tampa be if they had Peter Budaj instead of Andrei Vasilevskiy?
They'd probably be in the playoffs, but not a home ice team.
No, they would not. I agree with you. So there you go. Those guys are critically important. They're really, really important.
Okay, and because of that, I asked this question, and this is, you know, seeing how Freddie Anderson got hurt last night, but also I've seen this happen numerous times with Carey Price. Why do defensemen keep pushing forwards on top of their goaltenders?
It's a great question, and I would tell you this, and hours and hours and hours of tape, I think that's why you need to hire people like Larry Robinson. That's why you need to hire people that have engaged in those situations. But change with the times and understand that. I think Dave King coached defense as well as anybody. When he was with Montreal Canadiens, he really was fundamentally sound. I watched him work with Patrice Brisebois. I watched him work with all the Canadiens defensemen and made them all better. Every one of them got better. Brett Clark, my gosh. Brett Clark was a kid that nobody wanted, and all of a sudden became a really good defenseman for the Montreal Canadiens. Dave King influenced him. But I'm with Mitch Gallo on this. Why do we consistently see defensemen pushing opposition forwards into their goals? Because they don't know how to establish body position. That's why.
They're beat. And once you get beat, what do? But like, you try to make it look like you're doing something, but you've already made the initial mistake that you can't recover from.
Last night, the puck was frozen, and Polak body slammed Radulov right on top of Anderson's head.
Radulov got a penalty.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. But what are you doing?
You just said it. That's a player that's just been moved and moved and moved, talking about Roman Polak. And Mike Babcock has a soft spot in his heart for that player. I'm telling you, he likes that player a ton. You never fall in love with players, but you can fall in like with players. There's a big difference. And Mike thinks the world of that player because he admires his courage and he admires the way he competes and he loves the way he practices. I'm just telling you. But, no, that's a great example, what Mitch Gallo just brought up. That should never happen. Should never, ever happen.
So 24 hours ago, a lot of our discussion was about Jonathan Drouin and the work he did, and others, but the work he did up against Dallas and their heavy top line. Going up against Pittsburgh, do you kind of make the same kind of challenge if you're Julien and his group? Going up against another high-powered offense, do you challenge a player like that?
Yeah, I would. Absolutely. I think you have no choice. But the big thing with Pittsburgh and Jonathan Drouin is starting to trumpet all the center icemen for Pittsburgh because he's right on. And that's something that shows that he's paying attention. You go Crosby, Malkin, and then you can rotate because, you know, everybody's talking about Brassard, but they have Riley Sheahan, who's just an amazing, amazing player. So... their center ice depth is pretty awesome. And that was the thing. The reason why they're in limbo in the standings, talking about Pittsburgh, you lose Nick Bonino and you lose Matt Cullen. That was a lot of their offensive depth because that's where they used to beat you with the third and fourth lines. If you watch the two goals that went in for the Pittsburgh Penguins last night, the third line scored one and the fourth line scored one. The top two lines got shut out, but they're getting that center ice depth again. But that was good that Jonathan Drouin was aware of their center ice depth. And, yeah, I would challenge all my players, not just a couple of guys. I challenge all of them.